"Is it the wildlings?" she asked. "Well, who else?" Ned lifted ice, looked down the cool steel length of it. "And it will only grow worse. The day may come when I will have no choice but to call the banners and ride north to deal with this king beyond the wall, for good and all." Beyond the wall? The thought made Catelyn shudder. Ned saw the dread on her face. "Mance Rayder is nothing for us to fear. There are darker things beyond the wall." She glanced behind her at the heart tree, the pale bark and red eyes, watching, listening, thinking its long, slow thoughts. His smile was gentle. "You listen to too many old Nan stories. The others are as dead as the children of the forest, gone 8,000 years. Maester Lewin will tell you they never lived at all. No living man has ever seen one." "Until this morning, no living man had ever seen a direwolf either," Catelyn reminded him. I ought to know better than argue with a Tully," he said with a rueful smile. He slid ice back into its sheath. "You did not come here to tell me crib tales. I know how little you like this place. Now what is it, my lady?" Catelyn took her husband's hand. "There was grievous news today, my lord. I did not wish to trouble you until you had cleansed yourself." There was no way to soften the blow, so she told him straight. "I'm so sorry, my love. John Aaron is dead." His eyes found hers, and she could see how hard it took him, as she had known it would. In his youth, Ned had fostered at the Eyrie, and the childless Lord Aaron had become a second father to him and his fellow ward, Robert Baratheon. When the Mad King, Aerys second Targaryen, had demanded their heads, the Lord of the Eyrie had raised his moon and falcon banners in revolt, rather than give up those he had pledged to protect. And one day, 15 years ago, this second father had become a brother as well, as he and Ned stood together in the sept at River Run to wed two sisters, the daughters of Lord Hoster Tully. "John," he said, "is this news certain?" "It was the king's seal, and the letter is in Robert's own hand. I saved it for you. He said Lord Aaron was taken quickly. Even Maester Pycelle was helpless, but he brought the milk of the poppy, so John did not linger long in pain." "That is some small mercy, I suppose," he said. She could see the grief on his face, but even then he thought first of her. "Your sister," he said, and John's boy, what word of them?" "The message said only that they were well and had returned to the Eyrie," Catelyn said. "I wish they'd gone to River Run instead. The Eyrie is high and lonely, and it was ever her husband's place, not hers. Lord John's memory will haunt each stone. I know my sister. She needs the comfort of family and friends around her. Your uncle waits in the Vale, does he not? John named him Knight of the Gate, I heard." Catelyn nodded. "Brynden will do what he can for her, and for the boy. That is some comfort, but still..." "Go to her," Ned urged. "Take the children. Fill her halls with noise and shouts and laughter. The boy of hers needs other children about him, and Lysa should not be alone in her grief." "Would that I could," Catelyn said. "The letter had other tidings. The king is riding to Winterfell to seek you out." It took Ned a moment to comprehend her words, but when the understanding came, the darkness left his eyes. "Robert is coming here?" When she nodded, a smile broke across his face. Catelyn wished she could share his joy, but she had heard the talk in the yards, a dire wolf dead in the snow, a broken antler in its throat. Dread coiled within her like a snake, but she forced herself to smile at this man she loved, this man who put no faith in signs. "I knew that would please you," she said. "We shall send word to your brother on the wall." "Yes, of course," he agreed. "Ben will want to be here. I shall tell Maester Lewin to send his swiftest bird." Ned rose and pulled her to her feet. "Damnation, how many years has it been? And he gives us no more notice than this? How many in his party, did the message say?" "I should think 100 knights at the least, with all their retainers, and half again as many free riders. Cersei and the children travel with them." "Robert will keep an easy pace for their sakes," he said. "It's just as well. That will give us more time to prepare." "The Queen's brothers are also in the party," she told him. Ned grimaced at that. There was small love between him and the Queen's family. Catelyn knew. The Lannisters of Castle Rock had come to Robert's cause when victory was all but certain, and he had never forgiven them. "Well, if the price for Robert's company is an infestation of Lannisters, so be it. It sounds as though Robert is bringing half his court." "Where the king goes, the realm follows," she said. "It will be good to see the children." The youngest was still sucking at the Lannister woman's teat the last time I saw him. He must be, what, 5 by now? "Prince Tommen is 7, she told him. "The same age as Bran." "Please, Ned, guard your tongue. The Lannister woman is our queen, and her pride is said to grow with every passing year." Ned squeezed her hand. "There must be a feast, of course, with singers, and Robert will want to hunt. I shall send Jory south with an honour guard to meet them on the King's Road and escort them back." "Gods, how are we going to feed them all? On his way already, you said?" "Damn the man! Damn his royal hide!" Daenerys. Her brother held the gown up for her inspection. "This is beauty. Touch it. Go on, caress the fabric." Danny touched it. The cloth was so smooth that it seemed to run through her fingers like water. She could not remember ever wearing anything so soft. It frightened her. She pulled her hand away. "Is it really mine?" "A gift from the Magister Illyrio," Viserys said, smiling. Her brother was in a high mood tonight. "The colour will bring out the violet in your eyes, and you shall have gold as well, and jewels of all sorts. Illyrio has promised. Tonight you must look like a princess." A princess, Danny thought. She had forgotten what that was like. Perhaps she had never really known. "Why does he give us so much?" she asked. "What does he want from us?" For nigh on half a year they had lived in the Magister's house, eating his food, pampered by his servants. Danny was 13, old enough to know that such gifts seldom come without their price, here in the free city of Pentos. "Illyrio is no fool," Viserys said. He was a gaunt young man with nervous hands and a feverish look in his pale lilac eyes. "The Magister knows that I will not forget my friends when I come into my throne." Danny said nothing. Magister Illyrio was a dealer in spices, gemstones, dragon bone, and other less savory things. He had friends in all the 9 free cities, it was said, and even beyond, in Vaes Dothrak and the fabled lands beside the Jade Sea. It was also said that he had never had a friend he wouldn't cheerfully sell for the right price. Danny listened to the talk in the streets, and she heard these things, but she knew better than to question her brother when he wove his web of dreams. His anger was a terrible thing when roused. Viserys called it waking the dragon. Her brother hung the gown beside the door. "Illyrio will send the slaves to bathe you. Be sure you wash off the stink of the stables. Khal Drogo has 1,000 horses. Tonight he looks for a different sort of mount." He studied her critically. "You still slouch. Straighten yourself." He pushed back her shoulders with his hands. "Let them see that you have a woman's shape now." His fingers brushed lightly over her budding breasts and tightened on a nipple. "You will not fail me tonight. If you do, it will go hard for you. You don't want to wake the dragon, do you?" His fingers twisted her, the pinch cruelly hard through the rough fabric of her tunic. "Do you?" he repeated. "No," said Danny meekly. Her brother smiled. "Good." He touched her hair almost with affection. "When they write the history of my reign, sweet sister, they will say that it began tonight." When he was gone, Danny went to her window and looked out wistfully on the waters of the bay. The square brick towers of Pentos were black silhouettes outlined against the setting sun. Danny could hear the singing of the red priests as they lit the night fires and the shouts of ragged children playing games beyond the walls of the estate. For a moment she wished she could be out there with them, barefoot and breathless, and dressed in tatters, with no past, no future, and no feast to attend at Khal Drogo's manse. Somewhere beyond the sunset, across the narrow sea, lay a land of green hills and flowered plains and great rushing rivers, where towers of dark stone rose amidst magnificent blue-grey mountains, and armoured knights rode to battle beneath the banners of their lords. The Dothraki call that land Rayush and Dali, the land of the Andals. In the free cities they talked of Westeros and the Sunset Kingdoms. Her brother had a simpler name. Our land, he called it. The words were like a prayer with him. If he said them enough, the gods were sure to hear. Ours by blood right. Taken from us by treachery. But ours still, ours forever. You do not steal from the dragon. Oh, no, the dragon remembers. And perhaps the dragon did remember. But Dany could not. She had never seen this land her brother said was theirs, this realm beyond the narrow sea. These places he talked of, Casterly Rock and the Eyrie, High Garden and the Vale of Erin, Dawn and the Isle of Faces, they were just words to her. Viserys had been a boy of 8 when they fled the King's Landing to escape the advancing armies of the usurper, but Daenerys had been only a quickening in her mother's womb. Yet sometimes Dany would picture the way it had been. So often had her brother told her the stories. The midnight flight to Dragonstone, moonlight shimmering on the ship's black sails, her brother Rhaegar battling the usurper in the bloody waters of the Trident and dying for the woman he loved. The sack of King's Landing, by the ones Viserys called the usurper's dogs, the Lords Lannister and Stark, Princess Elia of Dawn, pleading for mercy as Rhaegar's heir was ripped from her breast and murdered before her eyes. The polished skulls of the last dragon staring down sightlessly from the walls of the throne room, while the Kingslayer opened father's throat with a golden sword. She had been born on Dragonstone 9 moons after their flight, while a raging summer storm threatened to rip the island fastness apart. They said that storm was terrible. The Targaryen fleet was smashed while it lay at anchor, and huge stone blocks were ripped from the parapets and sent hurtling into the wild waters of the narrow sea. Her mother had died birthing her, and for that her brother, Viserys, had never forgiven her. She did not remember Dragonstone either. They had run again, just before the usurper's brother set sail with his new-built fleet. By then only Dragonstone itself, the ancient seat of the house, had remained of the 7 kingdoms that had once been theirs. It would not remain for long. The garrison had been prepared to sell them to the usurper, but one night Sir Willem Darry and 4 loyal men had broken into the nursery and stolen them both, along with her wet nurse, and set sail under cover of darkness for the safety of the Bravosian coast. She remembered Sir Willem dimly, a great grey bear of a man, half-blind, roaring and bellowing orders from his sickbed. The servants had lived in terror of him, but he had always been kind to Dany. He called her Little Princess, and sometimes My Lady, and his hands were soft as old leather. He never left his bed, though, and the smell of sickness clung to him day and night, a hot, moist, sickly, sweet odour. That was when they lived in Braavos, in the big house with the red door. Dany had her own room there, with a lemon tree outside her window. After Sir Willem had died, the servants had stolen what little money they had left, and soon after they had been put out of the big house. Dany had cried when the red door closed behind them forever. They had wandered since then, from Braavos to Myr, from Myr to Tyrosh, and unto Kohor, and Volantis, and Lys, never staying long in any one place. Her brother would not allow it. The usurper's hard knives were close behind them, he insisted, though Dany had never seen one. At first the magisters and archons and merchant princes were pleased to welcome the last Targaryens to their homes and tables, but as the years passed and the usurper continued to sit upon the Iron Throne, doors closed and their lives grew meaner. Years passed, they had been forced to sell their last few treasures, and now even the coin they had gotten from Mother's crown had gone. In the alleys and wine sinks of Pentos, they called her brother the Beggar King. Danny did not want to know what they called her. "We will have it all back some day, sweet sister," he would promise her. Sometimes his hand shook when he talked about it. "The jewels and the silks, Dragonstone and King's Landing, the Iron Throne and the Seven Kingdoms, all they have taken from us, we will have it back." Viserys lived for that day. All that Daenerys wanted back was the big house with the red door, the lemon tree outside her window, the childhood she had never known. There came a soft knock on her door. "Come," Danny said, turning away from the window. Illyrio's servants entered, bowed, and set about their business. They were slaves, a gift from the Magister's many Dothraki friends. There was no slavery in the free city of Pentos. Nonetheless, they were slaves. The old woman, small and grey as a mouse, never said a word, but the girl made up for it. She was Illyrio's favourite, a fair-haired, blue-eyed wench of 16 who chattered constantly as she worked. They filled her bath with hot water, brought up from the kitchen, and scented it with fragrant oils. The girl pulled the rough cotton tunic over Danny's head and helped her into the tub. The water was scalding hot, but Daenerys did not flinch or cry out. She liked the heat. It made her feel clean. Besides, her brother had often told her it was never too hot for a Targaryen. "Ours is the house of the dragon," he would say. "The fire is in our blood." The old woman washed her long, silver-pale hair and gently combed out the snags, all in silence. The girl scrubbed her back and her feet and told her how lucky she was.
"Drogo is so rich that even his slaves wear golden collars. 100,000 men ride in his Khalasar, and his palace in Vaes Dothrak hath 200 rooms and doors of solid silver."
There was more like that, so much more. What a handsome man the Carl was, so tall and fierce, fearless in battle, the best rider ever to mount a horse, a demon archer. Daenerys said nothing. She had always assumed that she would wed Viserys when she came of age. For centuries the Targaryens had married brother to sister, since Aegon the Conqueror had taken his sisters to bride. The line must be kept pure, Viserys had told her 1,000 times. Theirs was the king's blood, the golden blood of old Valyria, the blood of the dragon. Dragons did not mate with the beasts of the field, and Targaryens did not mingle their blood with that of lesser men. Yet now Viserys schemed to sell her to a stranger, a barbarian. When she was clean, the slaves helped her from the water and toweled her dry. The girl brushed her hair until it shone like molten silver, while the old woman anointed her with the spice flower perfume of the Dothraki plains, a dab on each wrist, behind her ears, on the tip of her breasts, and one last one, cool on her lips, down there between her legs. They dressed her in the wisps that Magister Illyrio had sent up, and then the gown, a deep plum silk, to bring out the violet in her eyes. The girl slid the gilded sandals onto her feet, while the old woman fixed the tiara in her hair, and slid golden bracelets crusted with amethysts around her wrists. Last of all came the collar, a heavy gold torque emblazoned with ancient Valyrian glyphs.
"Now you look all a princess," the girl said breathlessly when they were done.
Danny glanced at her image in the silvered looking glass that Illyrio had so thoughtfully provided. "A princess," she thought. But she remembered what the girl had said, how Khal Drogo was so rich even his slaves wore golden collars. She felt a sudden chill, and goose flesh pimpled her bare arms. Her brother was waiting in the cool of the entry hall, seated on the edge of the pool, his hand trailing in the water. He rose when she appeared, and looked her over critically.
"Stand there," he told her. "Turn around. Yes, good. You look..."
"Regal,"
Master Illyrio said, stepping through an archway. He moved with surprising delicacy for such a massive man. Beneath loose garments of flame-coloured silk, rows of fat jiggled as he walked. Gemstones glittered on every finger, and his man had oiled his forked yellow beard until it shone like real gold. May the Lord of Light shower you with blessings on this most fortunate day, Princess Daenerys, the Magister said as he took her hand. He bowed his head, showing a thin glimpse of crooked yellow teeth through the gold of his beard. She is a vision, Your Grace, a vision, he told her brother. Drogo will be enraptured. She's too skinny, Viserys said. His hair, the same silver blonde as hers, had been pulled back tightly behind his head and fastened with a dragon bone brooch. It was a severe look that emphasized the hard, gaunt lines of his face. He rested his hand on the hilt of the sword that Illyrio had lent him and said, Are you sure that Khal Drogo likes his women this young? She has had her blood. She is old enough for the Khal, Illyrio told him, not for the first time. Look at her, the silver-gold hair, those purple eyes. She is the blood of old Valyria, no doubt, no doubt, and high-born. Daughter of the old king, sister to the new, she cannot fail to entrance our Drogo. When he released her hand, Daenerys found herself trembling. I suppose, her brother said doubtfully, the savages have queer tastes, Boys, horses, sheep. Best not suggest this to Khal Drogo, Illyria said. Anger flashed in her brother's lilac eyes. Do you take me for a fool? The Magister bowed slightly. I take you for a king. Kings lack the caution of common men. My apologies if I have given offence. He turned away and clapped his hands for his bearers. The streets of Pentos were pitch dark when they set out in Illyrio's elaborately carved palanquin. Two servants went ahead to light their way, carrying ornate oil lanterns with panes of pale blue glass, while a dozen strong men hoisted the poles to their shoulders. It was warm and close inside behind the curtains. Danny could smell the stench of Illyrio's pallid flesh through his heavy perfumes. Her brother, sprawled out on the pillows beside her, never noticed. His mind was away across the narrow sea. We won't need his held Khalasar, Viserys said. His fingers toyed with the hilt of his borrowed blade, though Danny knew he had never used the sword in earnest. 10,000, that would be enough. I could sweep the Seven Kingdoms with 10,000 Dothraki screamers. The realm will rise for its rightful king. Tyrell, Redwyn, Dary, Greyjoy, they have no more love for the usurper than I do. The Dornish men burn to avenge Ilya and her children. And the small folk will be with us. They cry out for their king. He looked at Illyrio anxiously. Well, they do, don't they? They are your people, and they love you well, Master Illyrio said amiably. In Holdfast across the realm, men lift secret toasts to your health, while women sew dragon banners and hide them against the day of your return from across the water. He gave a massive shrug. Or so my agents tell me. Danny had no agents, no way of knowing what anyone was doing or thinking across the narrow sea, but she mistrusted Illyrio's sweet words, as she mistrusted everything about Illyrio. Her brother was nodding eagerly, however. I shall kill the usurper myself, he promised, who had never killed anyone, as he killed my brother Rhaegar and Lannister too, the Kingslayer, for what he did to my father. That would be most fitting, Magister Illyrio said. Danny saw the smallest hint of a smile playing around his full lips, but her brother did not notice. Nodding, he pushed back a curtain and stared off into the night, and Danny knew he was fighting the Battle of the Trident once again. The nine tarred manse of Khal Drogo sat beside the waters of the bay, its high brick walls overgrown with pale ivy, It had been given to the Carl by the magisters of Pentos, Illyrio told them. The free cities were always generous with the horse lords. It is not that we fear these barbarians, Illyrio would explain with a smile. The Lord of Light would hold our city walls against a million Dothraki, or so the Red Priest promise. Yet why take chances when their friendship comes so cheap?